Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah.
Welcome to a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports. Right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Always happy to be along with you on the afternoon drives as we talk both local and national sports. And today we are going to mix it up, but I want to talk a little bit more basketball. Monday and Tuesday, it was all football talk. And rightfully so. We're gearing up for Super Bowl 53, which you cannot forget, you can listen to right here on KOAL. Live coverage is going to begin at noon, and it's going to be with you all day long. And you know, over the next couple of weeks, we'll be bringing on special guests. We'll be talking a lot about the NFL. So today, I do want to focus on the NBA and some of the news that broke yesterday. Carmelo Anthony on his way out. Well, I guess this was Monday it was broken. On his way out of Houston, going to Chicago. It's expected the Bulls will try to probably find a way to trade him if they can't just outright release him. But the news coming out of the NBA today is that it looks as if Melo will more than likely join the Los Angeles Lakers, which I don't hate this idea. Here's the thing with Carmelo. I think Melo has some decent basketball left. I believe Melo has to play around the right people. To me, James Harden, one of the most dynamic scorers that we've seen in the last 25 years. I put him top five. Okay. I don't know that that's a good fit for Melo. Russell Westbrook, don't know if it's a good fit. I'm just going over some of the places that he has been. New York, past his prime, wasn't a place for Melo. He can't be that guy. You know who Melo needs to play with? He needs to play with LeBron. And if it doesn't work with LeBron, then it's time to call it a career. Got a point guard in Lonzo Ball, Rajon Rondo. To me, it does make sense. But I also think there's going to have to be some give on Melo's side as well. I mean, does he understand that he's a guy that's got to come off of the bench? He's got to give a scoring boost when needed. He can't be a ball stopper. To me, it makes sense for him to go to LA. Looks like the Lakers are going to be the favorites to land him. The other spot I wouldn't mind seeing Melo, I wouldn't mind seeing him in San Antonio either. I think that could fit. I think it could work. LaMarcus Aldridge has played great basketball. I think San Antonio is going to be active during the trade deadline. All this talk about all these teams in the West, I don't think San Antonio is getting enough pub. If the Spurs make a move at the deadline, you got to pay attention to this team. So, again, news coming out of, I don't know if you want to call it LA, Chicago, Houston, wherever, but the Lakers seem to be the favorites to land Carmelo Anthony. Let's take a look at some of the other news coming out of the NBA. Dirk Nowitzki has been invited to participate in the three-point contest. This is my favorite competition, All-Star Weekend. I'm fascinated by people that can shoot the basketball. Dunking, meh. If you're over 6 foot, you probably should be able to dunk the basketball at this stage. Nowitzki's only played in 16 games this year, and he's just shooting 26% from the three-point line. Had ankle surgery last April. Kept him out of Dallas's first 26 games, but it's also impacting his performance. And the end is near for Dirk Nowitzki. But see, that's some of the great things about the NBA All-Star Weekend. You know, people get upset when Kobe was voted in as an All-Star. He deserved it. You know, Michael Jordan wasn't playing like an All-Star. He deserved to be there All-Star Weekend. He deserved that. If I'm not mistaken, was it Vince Carter that gave up his spot so MJ could start? Like the Lifetime Achievement Awards, All-Star Weekend, I'm fine with. Because ultimately, NBA All-Star Weekend stinks now anyways. So you might as well bring back players like Dirk Nowitzki. It's going to make it entertaining. It's going to make it fun. I want to see Dirk in the three-point contest. I want to see Dirk win the three-point contest. That's what I want to see. Would he? Probably not. But I like that was some news today. Nowitzki will participate, or has been invited anyways, to participate in the three-point contest. We will talk trade deadline today on the show. And something that I'm not sure people are aware of, the NBA trade deadline has been pushed up drastically. It's February 7th. And the reason the NBA did that is because of the whole DeMarcus Cousins fiasco over the last couple of years. That was terrible. So the NBA decided to move the trade deadline up ahead of the All-Star break, which I love. Plus, I think it gives teams a little bit more time to make that push, get acquainted with the new piece. You got a little bit more time. You got basically an extra 2 to 3 weeks, which is a lifetime in the NBA. To me, one of the hottest names on the trade block, or I guess in trade rumors as we approach the trade deadline, should be Kemba Walker of the Charlotte Hornets. But according to The Athletic, he may not go anywhere. Now, the Mavericks looked into potentially grabbing Kemba in some sort of deal, but it appears that Michael Jordan not only wants to keep him, he wants to re-sign Kemba. To me, one of the best names, one of the biggest names that you could land over the next couple of weeks. We will talk a little bit more about Kemba Walker a little bit later on in the show. How about this? Larry Fitzgerald, if we talk NFL football, he's not done yet. Nope. One of the greatest receivers in the history of the game has signed a one-year deal with the Arizona Cardinals. He's coming back for his 16th season. I think this is great news. One of the most likable individuals in the NFL. And it appeared that he may be done. Played 1 year under Steve Wilkes. Didn't go well at all. You know that he's been instrumental in what's happening as far as Josh Rosen. But at the same time, now you have Larry Fitzgerald to mesh with Cliff Kingsbury. I think this works out perfect for the Cardinals. Larry Fitzgerald, again, everybody likes this guy. He is so easy to root for. And there's the idea of going out on a winner. But to me, there's also the idea of staying true. And Larry Fitzgerald is a Cardinal. I don't want to see this guy play for anyone else. I don't care if the Cardinals go 2-14 next year under Kingsbury. I want to see Larry Fitzgerald in a Cardinals uniform. And I want this guy to play for as long as possible. I think that's great news coming out of the NFL. Larry Fitzgerald, not done just yet. Let's take a look at the schedule in the NBA tonight because we have a full slate of games beginning at 5 p.m. tonight off of what was somewhat of an off night last night. The Toronto Raptors will take on the Indiana Pacers at 5 p.m. Celtics play host to the Cavs at 5:30. We get Orlando at Brooklyn, 5:30 start time of that game. The Clippers travel to meet the Miami Heat at 5:30. The Knicks, they'll play host to the Rockets. 6 o'clock hour tonight, nationally televised game, San Antonio at Philadelphia. We get Atlanta at Chicago. Memphis will play host to Charlotte. And then we get Detroit at New Orleans. Nationally televised game tonight, the Jazz will play host to the Denver Nuggets. We will get you to that game late because we have Emory High School basketball tonight at 7 o'clock, but we will get you out to David Locke and Ron Boone a little bit later on tonight for that Jazz Nugget contest. That's a quick look at what's happening in the national sports front. Again, I want to talk a lot of basketball. Coming up tonight here on KOAL, we get Emory and South Sevier. Coach Todd Jeffs of the Spartans will join us when we return, and we'll also catch up with a great friend of the show, Jameson Welsh, so we can talk NBA trade deadline. That's all coming up right here on this Wednesday edition of the show on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. We are live from the Auto Farm Studios. Reporting from the KOAL Newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. And tonight, the Emory Spartan boys basketball team will look to climb the 500 barrier in the Region 15 classification as they play host to the South Sevier Rams. This will mark the second and final meeting of the season between the two teams. They did meet right before Christmas on December 21st in a game that favored South Sevier. Emory is looking to rebound from a 105-100 loss from the San Juan Broncos this past Friday night in San Juan. Start time for tonight's contest against South Sevier is scheduled to begin at 6:30 p.m. Tip-off will follow at 7. Now, to gear up for tonight's game, head coach Todd Jeffs will be a special guest today on KOAL's Drive Time Sports beginning at 4 p.m. Coach Jeffs will talk about Friday's heartbreaking loss to San Juan on the road and the importance of tonight's game against South Sevier. Again, tip-off for tonight's game is set for 7. You can listen on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 a.m. beginning at 6:30. The Carbon Dino boys basketball team will make their return to the court tonight as they take on JUAB beginning at 7 p.m. on KRPX 95.3 The Peak. Tonight's contest is the second and final meeting between the two schools this season. JUAB won the first back on December 12th by a final score of 52-40. Only 5 games remain on the regular season slate for Carbon. Right now they are 2-5 ahead of 2 squads in Region 14, which would put them in the state championship tournament. Tonight will mark one of the final two home games for Carbon. The second will come on Friday against Providence Hall on senior night. Carbon will then end the final three games of the regular season on the road. Stay tuned to Castle Country Radio. We'll continue to talk about the Carbon Dino boys basketball team in the coming days. We move over to girls high school basketball. And last night, the Emory Lady Spartans moved to 7-0 in region play as they defeated the South Sevier Rams 62-49 in Monroe. Emory led 15-5 at the end of the first quarter, and South Sevier managed to keep it close. They trailed by only 9 at the end of the first half, but Emory pulled away by outscoring South Sevier by 8 points in the third quarter. In the win, Emory was led by Caselyn Toomer, who poured in a game-best 22 points. Kinley Toomer chipped in with 20 points, and Megan Jensen finished with 18. The Lady Spartans will look to keep their unbeaten record in check when they return to the court on Thursday in a home contest against the Richfield Wildcats. We take a look at the Carbon Lady Dinos, and they took a commanding lead over the Region 14 division as they topped the Juab Wasps last night by a final score of 47-31 on the road. In one of the most important contests of the season, Carbon outscored Juab in the first half 25-13. Second half was no different as Carbon continued to use their defense to keep Juab under double digits in each of the four quarters. Carbon was led by Abby Sacamano. She scored 13 points while Jody Noyes chipped in with 11. McKenna Blank scored 9 and Jordan Bianco finished with 8. The Carbon Lady Dinos will next take to the court tomorrow. They'll travel on the road to meet Providence Hall. Start time for that game is set for 7 p.m. Now, while the high school basketball season will continue, the wrestling season has reached its end point as now the teams will begin to prepare for the divisional tournament next week, followed by the state championship competition. Both Emory and Carbon competed in their final home meet of the season last night. Stay tuned to Castle Country Radio. We will go over the results from those meets as soon as they become available. And we'll also recap what's been a very exciting year for both teams as we prepare for the divisionals next week. We move to the national sports scene, and tonight on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM, the Utah Jazz will return to the court as they take on the Denver Nuggets at 8.30 PM. Tonight's broadcast of Utah Jazz basketball will begin immediately following the Emory High School and South Sevier game. Again, stay tuned for Utah Jazz basketball tonight, immediately following high school action. You can find more news, sports, and community events at CastleCountryRadio.com. Reporting, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
What you listening to?
Big Sports Radio Guy.
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss things.
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
Middle of the week already. Can't believe it. It's Wednesday. Tonight we have high school basketball coming up. The Emory Spartans will take on the South Sevier Rams in a highly important Region 15 showdown. South Sevier picked up a win in the first meeting between these two teams all the way back before December. Emory looking to rebound from a loss this past Friday on the road against San Juan. And joining us right now over the phone to talk about that, we have head coach Todd Jeffs. Coach, a pleasure as always. Thank you.
Yeah, pleasure to be with you, Jordan.
Coach, we'll start by talking about a game on Friday. If you like offensive basketball, you love this game. 32 minutes, and final score was 105-100. Unfortunately, didn't play out in our favor, but there were still some positives. I mean, offensively in this game, Kyson Stilson goes off for 46 points. And I thought that Kyson was a dominating 46 as well. He seemed to get to the basket anytime he wanted. But it was just shortcomings on the defensive side of the ball. I think it's really that simple.
Oh, it really is. You know, I looked at the stats afterwards, and from two-point range, we let them shoot 70-plus percent, and there's no call for that. You know, we just gave them layups time and time again, and we made so many nice runs offensively, but they answered every one of them, you know, right back in our face, and we didn't respond at all. Our guys were kind of patting themselves on the back, running back down the floor, and they were running it up our chin, and making layups out of it, and that was a little disheartening for me.
Yeah, you know that when you go to a place like that, there's always going to be some times where the close calls, San Juan typically gets the benefit of the doubt there. They typically do. I guess that's one of the things about home court advantage, Coach, especially when you got to travel all the way down to Blanding. I thought there were times in this game where I was a little surprised at some of the calls, but for the most part, I thought the boys fought through that.
Oh, I thought we did too. And I, you know, you get some of that on the road. It's just kind of funny because we don't seem to get it at our place. We get the worst of it on both ends of it for some reason. But, you know, you got to play above officials. I thought there were a couple of calls late in the game that were real questionable. I thought the one Brax fouled out on, he stepped right in front and stole the ball, and that was painful. And then Kyson got raked down the arm a couple of times on drives to the basket that could have made a difference. But, you know, I don't look at that so much as the difference in the game as us, you know, not coming up with a big play here and there. I think they got an offensive putback on a missed free throw late in the game that could have cut it to two, and it went to five as a result of that. And, you know, there was that play. There was an open three late in the game that their kid hit, and we missed a couple. And so, you know, we had our chances regardless of the officiating, and we just didn't make big plays, and their kids did. And you know, the results speak for themselves.
A 38-point second quarter for this Emory squad. Coach, you guys go into the break with the lead. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, there was a 10- or 12-point advantage for Emory in the first half of this game. Third quarter, 18 points compared to 28 for San Juan. What was the big difference in that third quarter?
Well, you know, I they made big shots. That the number 23, the Nielsen kid, he hit some really deep threes, and we're not going to guard that far away from the basket. And I think, you know, there was a little bit of a carryover. We let him get away from us two or three times right near the end of the second quarter. We had a 10- or 12-point lead, and he hits a couple of deep threes there that he's unguarded, and all of a sudden his confidence is sky high. And then the third quarter, he just, you know, pulls up from, I mean, there were a couple of them that were 35, 40 feet away, and he buries them. And, you know, and then the way they guarded us that third quarter, you know, they took away the three-point shot. We got so hot that second quarter that they just turned our guys into drivers. And I thought Brax and Kyson got to the basket well. Brax missed some layups, and we had some unfortunate turnovers in that stretch, and that was really the difference.
Coach, you know, I guess every game you learn something, and that's kind of the idea going through a lengthy season. Is the lesson here, got to play defense? I mean, is it really that simple?
Well, it really is, and we've known that for the last little bit. But it's kind of hard, you know, to let your guys buy into it when you're still winning games. I'm harping on them. Our defense isn't very good. We're giving up 75 points, 65, 75, 85 points a game. I said, telling our guys, and you know, they kind of brush it off. Oh, we're winning. You know, we can outshoot people. Well, we didn't outshoot somebody. You know, we didn't outscore somebody. We score 100 points, and that should be a definite win for you. But when you give up that many and give up that many layups, it's you know, a bad combination. So the one thing that I can take from it, and the one thing that I think our guys have taken away from it, is we got to do a much better job on the defensive end. And we're so talented offensively that if we can get that put together, regardless of whether we have a chance at a region title or not, we can make a serious run at a state title, you know, and if we get our stuff worked out defensively. And that's what we've done, you know, the last two or three days in practice. We've made a huge emphasis, and I think our guys are buying into it, and they're working hard and trying to make some adjustments defensively, and we've kind of gone away from some switches in situations to staying with our guy and make it a little bit more of a personal responsibility to shut a guy off from scoring. And so I think our guys are up to the challenge. I think, you know, we're going to see a different defensive team tonight.
Again, we're being joined right now by Coach Todd Jeffs of the Emory Spartans. Coach, I want to talk about the tear that Kyson Stilson has been on, scoring 40, 32, and 46 in three consecutive games, and their competitive games where Kyson's offense is needed. I mean, anyone that watches sports, you understand a guy can get to 30, 40 points at any level of basketball. I always look at the context of it. How is he getting to it, and at what stages of the game? This is probably one of the most impressive three-game stretches I've seen in high school basketball at this level.
Oh, I think you're absolutely right. He's getting to the basket at will, you know, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable. And our guys are looking for him, you know. We're trying to find him, and And I think we're getting him the ball in some good spots where he can make some things happen. And even late in the game, I think he just kind of took it on his shoulders and got to the basket. I think he was just fearless there. Made a couple of nice assists out of it, too. I think Brody hit a three late in the game, and Jordan Ecker had a really good look at a three off you know, a double team on Kyson. And so, you know, he's still making good reads. He's not just forcing shots up and looking for his own. He's still playing good basketball. So that's the thing that's most that I'm most happy about.
But when a kid is playing with that level of confidence, is it contagious for the other kids on the court?
Well, I think it should be. You know, it hasn't been. I think he's really getting what he can get. But, you know, we've missed some good looks and some easy opportunities otherwise, and we got to clean that up a little bit. But, again, I have a really hard time criticizing our guys offensively. We're making good decisions. We're shooting great percentages. We're really doing it on the offensive end. We got to play both ends of the floor, and we're not doing that right now.
Coach, let's talk about South Sevier, a team that's sitting at 5-1 right now in region play. You and I were talking before we hopped on air. It seems like a lifetime ago that we traveled to Monroe to take on South Sevier. It was all the way before Christmas, back on December 21st. It was a game that was highly competitive, a game of runs. I mean, South Sevier would get up by 10. We'd fight back, and it kind of went kind of in phases like that. This is a completely different team, talking of Emory today, than they were back on December 21st. I see a lot of difference.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. I think offensively we're in a pretty good groove, and I think the one thing I remember from that game is we had a ton of open looks at threes and just couldn't make them. I don't remember what we shot percentage-wise from the three-point range, but it was probably right around 20%, and we're shooting around almost 40%. We've doubled our output from three-point range since that time. So our guys are in a little bit better groove offensively. Two things that we've talked about time and time again on the show here, Jordan, is we've got Kate Brazier back, and he's starting to feel his feet. But South Sevier has their big force inside. The Chisholm kid is back, and he's a tough kid and an extra rebounder and an extra offensive threat for him as well. And so it'll be kind of fun to see the changes that those two kids bring, here tonight and see how that factors into the game. But, we're different. We're playing much better offensively. Again, we got to, they shot lights out down there. If you remember the game, they couldn't miss. I think they were above 50% from three-point range, and we've got to do something with that tonight and not let them get going like that.
Yeah, Coach, looking at the standings as far as Region 15 goes, I thought at the beginning of the year that a region champion could have three losses, and with South Sevier and Richfield splitting, I mean, it's very possible. This is a monumental week for this basketball team because you get both South Sevier and Richfield this week, but if you take care of business, I think a region championship is still within reach.
Oh, it is. Numerically, there's no doubt that we've got a chance to do something there. If we happen to win a couple of games this week, then everybody in the region has at least two losses, and we only have one more loss than them. So, and then they have to play each other. So there's definitely a lot of things can happen. And the one thing that I've learned, and I think I knew going in, was there's not a night off in this region. I mean, our region is really tough. North San Pete's sitting there at 0-6, and they're very capable of beating anybody on any night. And so it's a situation where you got to take care of business night in and night out, and everybody in the region is the same way.
Well, Coach, I'm looking forward to tonight's game. It's always fun when these two teams get together. I tell people all the time, if you're going to pick out a game, I know Carbon and Emory, it's always entertaining, but it just seems like South Sevier and Emory, it's top-notch high school basketball. It doesn't seem to get any better when you look at the rural area of Utah. I think Emory-South Sevier, to me, is second to none.
Well, I think you're right. South Sevier's got such a strong program, and their kids play so much basketball throughout their lives. They really don't beat themselves. They take care of the ball well. They don't turn it over. They do all those little extra things that make a big difference in a game. And so, fundamentally, they're really good. And we got to do a job defensively and make it tough on them.
Coach, thank you again for the time, and we'll see you tonight at the game. Best of luck.
Sure enough, thank you. Appreciate all you do for us, and and high school sports in our area. Jordan, you're awesome.
No, I appreciate the compliment. Thank you, Coach.
Thank you.
Again, that's Coach Todd Jeffs of the Emory Sport and Basketball Team. Live coverage of tonight's contest will begin at 6:30 p.m. Tip-off is scheduled at 7. We've got a break for just a moment. We'll talk more basketball when we return, but we'll flip to the NBA. We'll talk trade deadline. It's not that far off. February 7th this year. We'll talk about that when we return. It's a Wednesday edition of Drive Time Sports right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 a.m. live from the Auto Farm Studios.
Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 a.m.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 a.m. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. I want to talk NBA basketball. Seems like NBA kind of floats under the radar around this time of the year. I mean, we just wrapped up college football a couple of weeks ago. We are gearing up for the Super Bowl in about a week and a half. But there is still NBA basketball to be played. Joining us right now to talk a bit about that, Jameson Welsh, I believe the hype, NBA.com right now over the phone. Jameson, as always, it's a pleasure to get you on.
Man, Jordan, thanks for having me as always. You know, I know it's a great time for you. Your Rams are in the Super Bowl. You know, NBA's in full swing, so I know you're pretty occupied, but I'm just happy to be back on.
Yeah, you know, this is unique. Every now and then, I get a break away from the broadcast journalist, the radio host, and the fandom comes out. I mean, if you work in sports, at some point in time in your life, you are a fan. And it's not every day I can talk about the Rams being in the Super Bowl, so it's definitely a great year. Before we dive into that, before we dive into the NBA, you are stationed in Las Vegas. And I know this time of the year, it is just a different beast. And for someone who maybe has never been around Vegas, around the Super Bowl, I know I haven't. For as much time as I spent in Las Vegas, I've never been in Vegas around the Super Bowl. What's it like, Jameson, when you get to this point in time in the NFL season?
It's crazy because here's the thing. In Vegas, you have a lot of people who bet the game. They don't know the game. They bet props. They come for the game. They go to a casino to watch it. Usually a lot of the casinos have like a ballroom or some sort of room where they have a Super Bowl and projectors with a lot of good food and all you can drink and all kinds of specials like that. So it's an event. Like, it's a huge, huge event. And plus, the amount of action you have in Vegas, there's nothing like it. You know, you can't replicate the action and the atmosphere that Vegas has. Even with the states legalizing sports betting, it's not the same as Las Vegas.
Never will be, right? For any sport. I mean, I know that there was a major boxing fight this past weekend with Manny Pacquiao. I know Pacquiao's lustre's wore off a little bit, but it was still a big deal. Pay-per-view fight with Pacquiao and Broner. There's nothing like a major sporting event when you're in Vegas. I've been there many of times for major fights, be it UFC or boxing. It's just unique in itself. And I challenge every sports fan to experience that once, because it's unlike anything.
Yeah, what takes place is this. The atmosphere is different because, you know, usually there's a lot of action, a lot of stuff going on, a lot of publicized, a lot of marketing around an event out here. Even though the boxing match, like you mentioned, I wouldn't say it's a major fight in names, but it really wasn't a major fight. People really weren't, I mean, people watched, but it wasn't one of those things where you had to see. If you missed it, it wasn't the end of the world. It wasn't one of those fights. But at the same time, it was an event. You know, it was on Saturday night at MGM. And it brings out everybody. You know, people, you know, like seeing boxing. They like seeing events, like betting on it. And, you know, like any other event, there's definitely prop bets. But the Super Bowl, it's the same thing. There's so many prop bets you can bet on. It keeps the game exciting. You're going to watch. And also, you're in Vegas. So, if you know, the whole weekend, if you're in Vegas from Friday night to Monday morning, you get to have a good old time and everything is around the Super Bowl.
You can correct me if I'm wrong here, but in my mind, there's still two sporting events out there that provoke the event status. I'm talking about dressing up in a three-piece suit. I'm talking about looking the part to go to the event. It's a boxing match in Vegas, and it's got to be the Kentucky Derby. In my mind, those are still the two main events that I'm talking about as far as you know, dressing up, making an appearance. Those two stand out to me.
Yeah. You know, that's the situation. You know, a big-time boxing match. But the one on Saturday, you could win with it. Sweats or jeans, because that wasn't really that big
right. Yeah. You're not wearing sweats and jeans to Canelo Triple G.
Nah, you got to show out. You know, for that one, you got to show out. When Pacquiao fought Floyd, you know, then they fought a few years back. That's when you got to show out in. When Earl Spence fights Keith Thurman or whomever he fight, whoever's at the 1A or 1B at that time, Terrence Crawford, if they ever figure that out. Yeah, but, you know, like on the weekend, that's a you know, that's jeans and T-shirt kind of fight, because Adrian Bronner is a joke, and I'm tired of seeing him get big fights. Like, we need to boycott this guy. This guy is disrespectful to the sport, not because of his post-game conference stuff, because I don't care about any of that, but the way he treats the crowd. He's an awful fighter that has gotten worse and worse and worse every time we've seen him. And to me, that's the biggest problem. I don't care about the antics. I really don't. That's part of boxing. Anyone who's watched boxing, the antics have been there forever. They're always going to be there. But the lack of getting better, the lack of improving your craft and skill is where I have the issue with Adrian Broner. It's the same thing we talk about every fight with this guy. He has very little power. He's not aggressive. And he just stinks. Like, he's a C-minus fighter at best.
I'm with you.
Hard to see.
No, I'm with you. I'm with you 100%. Jameson, let's talk NBA for a moment. We'll step away from the events. I know there's so much to talk about in that realm, and I love that segment. But I do want to talk NBA because as we get to the end of January, the trade deadline is not that far off, and we're going to see names start poking up. In fact, earlier this week, it was announced that the Houston Rockets are sending Carmelo Anthony over to the Chicago Bulls. Gives the Bulls some options on how they want to handle that situation. But we will see bigger names pop up around the trade deadline. As far as the monitoring of the Anthony Davis situation, I don't believe Anthony Davis is going anywhere, but there are a few names that I like as far as the trade rumors go. What have you heard? Who seems to be the biggest name drawing the most attention at this particular time?
People are talking about Anthony Davis. They're not going to move him midseason. I think Mark Gasol might get moved. As crazy as that sounds. Mm-hmm, Grizzlies are on. You know, they're not making the playoffs. They've hit a really bad patch of games, and you know, their team I can see kind of tearing it all down. They have a big guy they drafted, Jaren Jackson Jr. He's the future of the team. He plays the same position as Marc Gasol. So if you can get value from Marc Gasol, you move him, you get out of that contract. So I can see that happening. But also, you know, there's not a whole lot of names per se, like not any big names. We've heard Bradley Beal with the Wizards doing a lot better since he's been there, and he's been the number one guy. So I don't know if that's going to happen. So it's just a lot really going on, and we don't really – it's a weird trade deadline because, one, it's before the All-Star game, which is weird to me. But I understand why they did it because of the whole DeMarcus Cousins thing a couple years ago. So I get that, but it's just kind of weird how it's earlier now. But I guess it also gives more time for the buyouts before the March 1st deadline, so I get it. But there's really no real names, no big names to say, hey, we know this guy's getting moved like last year. We knew guys were getting moved. You know, we know guys in certain years are getting moved. This year, I think we're in for a surprise because the thing that people don't realize, the league is kind of on hold until it happens this summer with the Anthony Davis situation, Kevin Durant situation, Kyrie Irving situation. There's three big names that we don't know what they're going to be at next year. So we have to wait until all that dust settles.
We'll talk about the Utah Jazz because this is a team that has now moved into the top eight. I do believe the Jazz are going to make the playoffs. They seem to, I'm not going to say be going down the same route that they did last season, but I do believe the Jazz have improved their play, and I think it will be somewhat similar to what we saw last year. In my mind, the Jazz have to make a trade. And Jameson, it's been years. You and I have sat here and talked about Derek Favors getting moved. For how many damn years have you and I talked about this now?
Probably like six.
I swear, this guy's got nine lives in the Utah organization. And so let me throw a name out there to you. Again, another guy that I think the Jazz should target, and this is just me going off of my personal preference, make a trade for Kevin Love. Make a trade for Kevin Love. It makes sense on all angles. Derek Favors could be the key chip in this trade going over to Cleveland. The trade market has basically diminished for Kevin Love. But when I take a look at Utah, a team that's in, you know, outside the top 20 in three-point percentage, they tried to fix this with Kyle Korver, and it has helped. But to me, you put a guy like Kevin Love alongside of Rudy Gobert, and it just makes sense. And I don't want to hear anything from Jazz fans about the money in the contract to Kevin Love because the Jazz are never major players in free agency to begin with. I don't know that this catapults the Jazz to the top of the Western Conference, but I'll tell you what, if they acquire Kevin Love and they have to give up only Derek Favors and maybe a couple of key surrounding pieces, you know, a couple of surrounding pieces, to me, they're a top five team in the West. And I'm really curious to see how Rudy Gobert could mesh with someone like Love that could step out and improve, the outside shooting for the Jazz. To me, this just makes sense. Target Kevin Love at the deadline because he will be available.
That, and also, here's the thing. Here's the thing. I actually agree with that. My only issue is, does Kevin Love want to be in Utah? I wouldn't want to trade a guy that doesn't want to be in a city like that, especially for what he's done for the Cavs. You know, you don't want to just trade a guy to a place he doesn't want to be at because he's on the books for four more years. However, the Jazz do that. They'll make them dangerous because now they have two guys on the offensive end that can score 20, 25 a night without any issues. Like, it's not a stretch if they score that many points. And you still have someone that can cover up for him defensively. So that's not a bad trade. I would just, one, make sure he's actually healthy, and two, make sure he wants to be there or he's okay being there, because the last thing you want is a guy getting traded there and asking out July 1st.
He loves Park City. We know that. He loves Park City. He's been open about that. So, to me, it makes sense. Look, again, I'm not getting caught up in the contract anymore. I know that he has a massive deal. I get this. There's no possible way this guy wants to be in Cleveland. That Cavaliers-Bulls contest earlier in the week was atrocious. I mean, that was terrible that people paid money to go watch that game. Like, the Cavs have got to move on from this guy. They have to completely turn the page. It's a wasteland for him right now in Cleveland. And I, you know what? As far as the defensive efficiencies, I can't think of anyone better to put him next to than Rudy Gobert. I really can't.
Right. Right. I mean, it definitely helps. Definitely helps the situation a lot. And it gives the Jazz a scoring punch. But, man, that's a lot. And the Jazz have to move a few pieces with regarding that, and probably a pick or two.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're picking a high, you know, it's a high first-rounder or low first-rounder in a sense. So it's not a bad idea. I just don't know if the Jazz are motivated to do so. But they should, because that puts them – and the, you know, that puts them in the top five out west for sure, maybe even higher, because the way they play defense, they wouldn't struggle offensively out the gate like they've done the last couple of years.
Right.
That's been their big issue. They can't score early on until they kind of figure it out and juggle the lineups. If you had a guy like Kevin Love, that at least makes your offense average, and it gives you a better starting point, got action. So we'll see, but that's not a bad trade at all.
Let's move over to the Eastern or stick with the Eastern Conference, I guess we should say, if we're talking about Cleveland dealing Kevin Love. Washington should definitely be a team to watch as far as the trade deadline goes. Now, they have played better ball as of late. I believe they've won 7 out of 10, and they're just a couple of games out of the postseason. But Washington should definitely do everything they possibly can to move Bradley Beal, right? It seems like it could be the right time for this to happen. I know that they're going to want a lot in return, but you have to entertain the idea nonetheless if you're the Wizards.
So here's the thing. What's fair value for Bradley Beal? Because they asked for both of Toronto's young wing players and I think a couple of draft picks as well. So, like, is that enough, or is that they want more? Like, it's an interesting situation, because a guy that young on a contract like that, you can't get very few places. Like, it's just not a situation where you can just go get another guy like Bradley Beal. And they're probably going to make the playoffs as a 7th or 8th seed. So if, you know, their owner just won the Stanley Cup Finals, I don't see them just being okay with being the 10th seed. I see them trying to be like, you know what, let's try to make the playoffs and see what happens. In a normal situation, I would agree with you, but I just don't see what they're asking for. I think it's too much, and I don't see anyone giving them that at the deadline. Maybe at the draft over the summer, but over the deadline, I just don't see him getting moved because the asking price is way too high right now.
Well, let me ask you this. You bring up Toronto. If the Raptors were allowed to keep Lowry, Kawhi, and Ibaka, I'd give up my entire roster out three of those guys. I really would.
Yeah, but their identity of their team is a little bit different. And when you start moving guys, your core guys, we saw in Houston. Houston has a similar situation. They moved some of their core chemistry guys, the guys they kind of built their identity around, and they weren't the same team. And even if you add a talented player as Bradley Beal, he's extremely talented, you still got to have guys that defend. You still got to have guys that do the dirty work. Especially when they're on contracts like that. Siakam and Anobi are on very good contracts. And right now you can argue they are the best team in the East. If they make that trade, it definitely puts them over the top. However, two things going on here. One, no one knows what Kawhi is doing. That's number one. Number two is this. Bradley Beal has 1 year left after this year, if I'm not mistaken. If you trade him and it doesn't go well and you give up two young pieces and two picks, it gets very ugly. You're almost starting over again.
Well, that's true. That's true. I do believe Toronto's in a position where you can. I think you can. I think you have to go all in at this point, because I really look. I know Milwaukee. They're fun to watch. Giannis is fantastic. I get it. 34-12. I know what Milwaukee has accomplished. I don't view Milwaukee as a legitimate threat to Toronto right now in a 7-game set. I really don't. And to me right now, this is Toronto's for the taking. Now, if we stick in the Eastern Conference, another team that should make a move, and I think the right player out there for Indiana would be Kemba Walker, this is a team that also, I believe, is in a position where they need to shoot for the moon at the trade deadline. Because while Toronto is the team to beat, in my mind, the clear-cut favorite, there's three or four teams lurking in the Eastern Conference, and Indiana's got to be one of them.
Yep, Indiana, I think Indiana's been better than Boston and Philly this year, if you think about the overall situation. With that being said, Indiana has a lot of cap space, and they have a lot of roster flexibility. So, yeah, they are able to make a big move. I just don't see the Hornets trading Kemba midseason. They're going to try to lock him up big time over the summer. Whether he stays or not, it's a different discussion. But, man, he's their best player in franchise history since they've rebirthed. And letting that guy go or trading him for Darren Collison and a couple of expiring contracts and maybe a draft pick, whew, that tells you that's rough because they don't have an immediate guy to step in, and you're really hoping for some stuff that I just don't know what's going to happen. So we'll see, but I would love to see that because if the Pacers got a second guy that can make plays off the bounce and score like that, you have a potential finals team. Like, that's how good they would be because the rest of their team is solid. Their front court is good enough. You know, Owen Depot's an all-star player. He's really good. If they added Kemba Walker to that, they'd be scary.
Jameson Welsh, again, our Drive Time Sports NBA Insider, talking NBA trade deadline. Jameson, it's going to be fun for the next couple of weeks to follow this particular storyline. I always appreciate you making time. Before I let you go, let the listeners know where we can find more of your work.
On here once a week, ESPN 1100 in Vegas, 720 a.m. in Vegas, 1340 on Fox Sports, New Mexico and in Vegas, and 1480 in Nebraska.
Jameson, always a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great day.
We got plenty more Drive Time Sports coming up when we return right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM live from the Auto Farm Studios.
Hey, what's going on? This is Ron Artest, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan. Listen, you must... say it again. Buscarini? All right. Jordan Buscarini. All right. With Jordan Buscarini. Shout out to Queens, Virginia, right now.
Coming to you live from Price.
Put that cookie down!
Price, Utah.
Now!
Me and my man, Trav.
Ah!
Love Price. Price is awesome.
Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini and Travis Anderson on KOAL AM 750. Eastern Utah's main source for local sporting news.
Back to close out this Wednesday edition of Drive Time Sports right here on KOAL 107.3 FM, 7:50 AM. Felt good to talk NBA. Like I said, we're falling into that time frame where NFL just kind of consumes everything. We do have a lot of NFL coverage coming up. I'm going to remind you again, do not forget, Super Bowl Sunday, you're going to be able to follow the play-by-play, live play-by-play. Not everybody can watch the Super Bowl. So if you can't watch it, it's okay. We'll have the live play-by-play for you. Live pregame coverage is going to begin at 12. That's noon, 12 noon, right here on KOAL on Super Bowl Sunday. And next week, we'll be running a special one-hour program called 7 Days to Sunday as we gear up for the big matchup, Super Bowl 53, Rams-Patriots. Now, coming up tonight, we have more play-by-play for you right here on KOAL. The Emory Spartans are going to take on the South Sevier Rams. I love it when these two teams get together. Absolutely love it. Landon's Diesel Service pregame show is going to begin at 6:30 p.m. You're going to hear from Coach Todd Jeffs and also Emory High School senior Brody Tuttle. And then as we move over to our sister station, KRPX 95.3 The Peak, tonight, live play-by-play coverage as Carbon takes on Juab. Sonny Buscarini and Chris Winfrey will bring you the play-by-play call. So plenty of local sports coming up. Plus, we'll get you out to the Utah Jazz and the Denver Nuggets tonight. A lot of basketball coming up. Always fun to talk about that here on the show. I want to thank Jameson Welsh. I want to thank Coach Todd Jeffs. Always great to get those two on the show. We will be back to do it again tomorrow right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. Be safe. I am out.